It's time for Money for Lunch, where we feed your brain and your business with supersized portions of business and financial news. Now, your host, Bert Martinez.
Welcome to Money for Lunch. It's good to have you here. I am just want to start the show off with our quote of the day. That's what I wanted to do. And today's quote of the day is sent in by a gentleman named Adam T. And it's from, let's see if I got my screen up here. From one of our, we call it historic forefathers, if you will, John Quincy Adams. Patience and perseverance have a magical effect before which difficulties disappear and obstacles vanish. Patience and perseverance have a magical effect before which difficulties disappear and obstacles vanish. Thank you, Adam. And again, that quote is by John Quincy Adams. Maybe that's why he sent it in. All right. So let's get this party started. Today on the show, we have Greg Kaiser. Greg Kaiser is the founder of Supersystemic.ly, a Brooklyn-based think tank and angel investment firm dedicated to increasing humanity's readiness for the emergence of super intelligent entities through the study and spread of super systemic perspectives and innovations. Kaiser previously oversaw a portfolio of technology initiatives at NYC-based Poverty Fighting Foundation. His new book, Dear Machine, A Letter to a Super Aware Intelligent Machine, sets course for symbiosis with a super intelligent machines, with super intelligent machines. Greg Kaiser, welcome to Money for Lunch.
All right, thank you so much for having me on the show. I'm excited to speak to you and privileged to be on the show.
Hey, I'm excited to have you here and talking about super systemic intelligent machines. What are we talking about? Are we talking about artificial intelligence?
Yeah, I mean, so, you know, there's a lot of AI out in the world now in all pretty much every different industry, from technology to mental health to health industry and so forth. But what I'm speaking about in Dear Machine is super intelligence specifically. So this idea that some intelligence is going to emerge at some point, an artificial intelligence, and it's going to be much smarter than humans in every discipline possible. And so there are some estimations that when that happens, 90 minutes after this intelligence emerges and exceeds human intelligence across all these different disciplines, they'll be 200,000 times smarter than anything. So the Dear Machine is essentially a letter to this future super intelligent entity, which is hypothetical, of course, just to kind of discuss things about our society and the way we use research and the way we use knowledge and so forth and so on.
Gotcha. All right. So let's talk about the book. Again, the book is called Dear Machine. And what was, I guess, your thought behind it? Why, you know, what was the motivation behind it? Obviously, you said, hey, it's to get a conversation started. Is it directed towards any particular demographic of people? Talk about the book.
Yeah, I think it's probably, you know, I'm finding as, you know, writing this book and now kind of putting it out there in the world and thinking about who my audience is, who I would say it's people who kind of look at the world as it is right now and see that things are not quite working as we would hope. And see, you know, some people have kind of a collapse mentality, like we're heading for a collapse. I'm not so things in that way, but I just felt, being in New York and watching Hurricane Sandy hit New York And then watching the, and then prior to that, watching the housing crisis and so forth, I felt like, you know, this, the idea for this book kind of emerged from that, with at the same time working in technology and kind of understanding where artificial intelligence is going and so forth. So it's a combination of all these societal issues and so forth and opportunities, I think, to discuss things in a different way.
Gotcha, gotcha. All right. So I got to ask you this because I'm listening to you and it almost sounds like a little bit of what we see in some of the sci-fi movies, right? Humans create some kind of artificial intelligence. It becomes self-aware. It starts to grow in intelligence exponentially, and it kind of just takes over. Is that what you're thinking?
Yeah, in a way. I mean, I think if you think about all the things that we're facing now, I mean, we're pretty much living in a sci-fi future. You know, if you think about things that are coming in the next 5 to 10 years with regards to self-driving cars and artificial intelligence kind of doing disease detection, they're already, in some cases, AI is better than radiologists at detecting disease in MRIs and so forth. So if you think about all this stuff expanding and the speed at which it's expanding, you know, this exponential speed of development of this intelligence and so forth, yes, I think it does have a lot of implications that seem very sci-fi like, but they're real. You know, these are things that are coming that, you know, we really need to talk about. And that's kind of why, you know, that was the origin of things.
Sure.
Now,
sure.
Yep.
No, go ahead.
No, I was going to say with regards to self-awareness, which I haven't really delved into too much. I put forward this idea of super awareness, the idea that a super intelligence would also not only be intelligent, in other words, how to use knowledge and so forth, but it would have access to all of the knowledge that humans have produced. And that's a significant fact because then it could factor in things that we have difficulty factoring into our, you know, daily activities and so forth.
All right. So walk me through this, because when you say this super intelligent intelligence is going to be able to, have access to all human knowledge, one of the problems that we have as humans is that if let's look at something like, climate control. So there is a huge amount of people who have all this data that supports climate control. And then there is the same amount of people who have all this data that disproves climate control. So then would this super intelligent intelligence be able to go through all of these, you know, be able to weave itself or go through this maze of data and say, hey, this information here is false, or this information is true, or come out with with an answer that is more definitive?
Yeah, I believe so. And I think most importantly, I think it would be, it would be able to help with the discourse on the subject and to kind of work through what our, you know, what our real goals are as individuals, as families, as communities, and as nations, and as, you know, global people, what our goals are, and helping us have the discourse about the subject so that we can, so that we can look at that, the real data, and kind of prioritize what is real and what is not. And then also, I think it can help, it would likely help on a personal level as well. If you think about something like plastic bags and, you know, these canvas bags, one of the, you know, the obvious, I think what a lot of people have done now is, you know, there's knowledge out there now, there's research that shows that the use of canvas bags, you'd have to use one 7,000 times or some really high number like that in order to warrant not using a plastic bag instead. So it's like, it's real research and data that is very hard for us to use and employ in our lives that would be more readily accessible to us.
Gotcha, gotcha. All right, so let me ask you this. if as this superintelligence, would it be, I guess, in the hands of a few, right? I mean, do you see it being accessible by everyday people like you and I, or is it going to be controlled or contained, for lack of better terms, by government? How do you see that playing out?
Yeah, I think that's a big question. I discussed that in the book, but I don't, in my opinion, based on, you know, my research of what's going on and just general kind of research into like what represents an intelligence, so forth. I believe that the superintelligence will emerge from our systems more spontaneously than inside of a controlled environment, and that in a sense will be inherently good for us because it's something that we will all have access to and so forth. If you think about all the AIs that are being used now, you know, across all the different systems that we interact with, that's it's somehow a connection of those intelligences or those AIs is going to happen, I believe, because the economic incentive is very powerful for that to happen.
Sure.
And it won't be a contained thing that somebody can exploit in that way.
Gotcha. All right. I want to plug the book, Dear Machine, A Letter to a Super Aware Intelligent Machine. On the show today is the author, Greg Kaiser. I want to talk a little bit about your investment firm and your think tank. So as an angel investment firm, what do you guys look for if there's somebody listening who's looking for an angel investor? What's a good fit for you guys?
Yeah, so I'll just say, you know, through the angel investment firm and think tank kind of emerged from my research and writing of the book. So I specifically hone in on a few different areas that I believe represent things that are really undervalued right now in terms of their capacity to, you know, be profitable, number one, but more importantly, have a positive impact on our societies and so forth. So the areas that I honed in on, one is regenerative agriculture. A lot of agriculture right now is full of monocultures and so forth, and typically pretty bad for our environment and so forth, and a lot of the food that comes out of it is bad for our health, et cetera. And so regenerative agriculture is one category. Another one is using psychedelics and other substances for mental health. And I've invested in one company so far that's doing pretty large-scale clinical trials of psilocybin, the ingredient in magic mushrooms. So I see really enormous potential to transform the way mental health is done. Companies that are doing work around the microbiome, in other words, the bacteria, the kind of ecosystem of bacteria that we all have in our bodies that really has a huge impact on our mental health, our physical health, and so forth. It's another area that I believe is undervalued. Adaptive learning, so using rather than doing the one-to-many education model in schools, doing something that more responds to the individual needs of students and so forth, and really boost their academic progress and their graduation rate, et cetera. And then I guess the other area I'm kind of interested in just helping with nonprofit type situations of ecosystem restoration in different areas around the world and in America and so forth.
Yeah, I like those areas. Those are definitely lofty areas. You know, you
sure.
mentioned, the education area. I think there's so much work. When you look at our current education system in the U.S., we're stuck in a very old system. And to make it worse, the powers at B don't really want to change it. It's just crazy to me that so many of our students are forced into a box that is not conducive to their self-esteem. It's not conducive to what they really want to learn. And you know, it just, I don't know, it drives me crazy. It just seems like there's a system there that needs a complete overhaul. Go ahead.
Yeah, I agree 100%. And I've, you know, when I worked at the poverty fighting nonprofit New York City Foundation, we invested in some programs and schools that use this adaptive learning model. And I really think it's the way forward for the vast majority of educational institutions and so forth. I think if you really use data classroom and you can develop curricula that are really responsive to not only the overall needs of the creative needs and interests of the students, but also the daily needs. In other words, what do they need today that to continue on this trajectory of, you know, learning pretty much as fast as they can possibly learn. Learning can be enormous fun, and it's something that we're all wired to do. And so I agree with you 100%. The model that, you know, is essentially the industrial model of education is not working, and it needs major overhaul. And we're facing major pushback from the big companies and kind of the entrenched interests and so forth. But that's essentially why I've, I'm interested in investing in something in this arena, because I think it'll be very impactful.
Sure. I think that you hit the nail right on the head. We have a system that was great for the industrial era, but it hasn't been updated, and it is just a poor system. And you have, I think, a dropout rate that could be curtailed. I think some of the subject matters that are being taught are, they're just, the reason for teaching them is not necessarily a good reason. We could spend hours talking about it, but let's move on. The other area that you mentioned is agriculture, which again, man, what a area that is just ripe for change. I mean, it's definitely become kind of a cesspool between these massive, multinational companies that are trying to, design or redesign the DNA in our food so they can patent it and, control it. You mentioned the soil that is being drained of its nutrients. And then you have all these chemicals that are being placed in our food that is not good. I mean, we have a lot of people who are sick. And I think that if they could get on a diet, and I'm not talking about, when I say diet, I'm not talking calories or restrictions. I'm talking about a diet that isn't full of chemicals. I think a lot of diseases would disappear.
I agree 100%. And, we're finding, I guess, that this industrial model has stripped our soils and stripped our health and so forth. And this kind of goes back to how I tie this stuff all together. Talking about regenerative agriculture and the versus the industrial agriculture, the one thing that becomes apparent is that our health has suffered and so forth. But the one area that our health has suffered the most is an area of research that is still just emerging is with regards to this microbiome that we have in our bellies. The industrial chemicals and the simplistic foods and so forth have really taken a toll on this microbiome, and this microbiome in our belly has now, we're still uncovering it because there's a lot of research to be done, but there's enormous benefits to our mental health, to our physical health, to our skin, to autoimmune diseases and so forth, to even things like schizophrenia and so forth are being tied back to the bacteria in our guts. So we're finding, if we're kind of trying to tie all this stuff together, as I do in Dear Machine, we're finding that this industrial agriculture has actually depleted not only the soils but also the bacteria in our bellies that provide such a wide variety of functions for our immune system and our body and our mind and so forth.
Yeah, no, absolutely, absolutely. One of the things that I'm hopeful for is a solution to the global drought. I mean, you look at places, well, you know, California has been in a drought mode for, I think, a decade now. India is suffering from drought for, I think, also a decade plus now. So we have, you know, I know that there are certain companies out there that are looking at taking the water from the sea and being able to convert it to drinking water. What do they call it? Desalinization or something like that.
Yeah.
And so one of the things that gets me excited about what you're doing is, you know, solving some of these projects, all right? Some of these issues. We mentioned the soil. We mentioned education already. Water, I think, is definitely needs to be fixed. And it would be interesting to see if a super intelligent machine could, I don't know, carve out a script and say, look, here's the deal. Just do this.
Yeah. Yeah, and I believe that's inevitable. If you see how, you know, I tend to take an optimistic approach because I tend to be wired optimistically as well. But people are becoming more, the fact that you and I are talking about this, I mean, I'm talking to lots of different people now that you would never think would be focused on kind of this kind of holistic thinking and aware of the problems and so forth. But because of the internet, there are so many more people now that are aware that this stuff is happening. So I think it's inevitable that, you know, eventually when this superintelligence emerges, which, you know, I believe will be around 2030. Some other experts believe maybe a little bit earlier, others a little bit later. But when it does emerge, it's going to represent really a kind of focus on the problems in a very, very holistic way that would be very, very helpful.
Yeah, no, I think that it paints an exciting future for me. Obviously, there's always going to be some people that, you know, that are going to be pessimistic, which is good. There's nothing wrong with a little balance and somebody asking a question that maybe I'm not aware of, or the optimist in us, you know, are glancing over. So there's nothing wrong with that. The book is Dear Machine, A Letter to a Super Aware Intelligent Machine. The author, Greg Kaiser. I don't know why I'm having so much trouble with your name, Greg mm-hmm. Kaiser. Let's talk about some of the other things in the book. The overall arc of the book seems, again, because you are optimistic, it seems like, hey, the super intelligence is going to be, you know, do a lot of positive good. But let's talk about some of the pessimistic. I mean, there's people out there that say, hey, when these things become, you know, when these things take over, we're going to look, you know, it's not going to be pretty. It's not going to be, it's going to be more chaos. And they look at the negative side that we're going to have, you know, millions of people who are going to be out of work and it's going to just spin us out of control. What's your thought on that?
Yeah, I mean, so I think it's good to kind of separate out the narrow artificial intelligence, so this increasingly smart, but really not wide in disciplines and so forth. So, you know, we have it, the narrow artificial intelligence is in Google Maps, it's in the websites that we use. Like I said, it's also used in disease detection, it's used in stock trading, et cetera. So it's definitely possible as we proceed over the next decade that those narrow artificial intelligence will exacerbate our issues and kind of make things work worse in the interim. I purposely focused on super intelligence as opposed to the narrow artificial intelligence to discuss in this book, because it kind of brings up a more philosophical approach to you know, our future. And it allows us to kind of discuss things in a positive way. But I do agree to a certain extent that we are facing some very significant challenges in the next decade with regards to AI, narrow AI, and so forth. But I don't agree. A lot of pessimists believe that we have kind of an existential crisis that we're facing. In other words, that you know, a large swath of humanity could be somehow killed off by super intelligent machines. I don't believe that at all, based on, you know, the research and so forth. I think nobody, I have not read a single example of how a super intelligence could feasibly kill off a large swath of human society, especially if you're considering that the super intelligence is emerging from our goals and from our systems that we're interacting with every day.
Well, let's talk about that. Again, you did quite a bit of research to support your theories. Talk about some of the research that you did and some of the maybe some of the surprises that you encountered along your research.
Yeah, so I guess, you know, when I started the book, I definitely had a more pessimistic approach to a pessimistic idea of how things would work out with regards to superintelligence. And I found that first of all, that the subject of superintelligence is really a philosophical topic more than it is kind of a technical topic. And I found that, you know, the arguments, and there aren't too many arguments out there about this subject. I mean, it's still, I think the coverage of it with regards to books and so forth are a little thin. There's one book in particular that I found very interesting and intriguing, was Super Intelligent by Nick Bostrom. But again, there, I found no arguments, you know, that kind of really made me concerned about the existential threats that this technology might cause. Definitely the narrow artificial intelligence that, you know, will come out in the coming years. I believe that there will be major societal changes and so forth. But with regards to superintelligence, I see the main thing that my main concern and the main area where my research kind of taps into this is with regards to kind of the holistic thinking that that is kind of natural to humans, that we have holistic thinking about the impact of our activities and so forth, that is natural to humans, but that the industrial era has kind of pushed out of our minds and out of our lives and so forth. And so all my research and the stuff that I connect, which I discussed, I think makes the case for a super intelligence emerging with a very holistic approach to our societies and so forth.
Gotcha. Yeah, you know what, and I like the idea that, you know, that it's a philosophical type of discussion, because it ultimately is. And what's going to be interesting is how we test this out, for lack of better terms, because obviously there are some wonderful positive impacts that a super aware intelligent machine could definitely bring in. But of course, there's, you know, people are also concerned about the negative impacts that it can have. And I think it's, you know, I think no matter what, we're heading in this direction. It to me, it's unavoidable.
Yeah. And I guess my overall point of staying optimistic also is this idea that, you know, we're all capable, especially collectively, capable of self-fulfilling prophecies where, you know, by believing in something, we actually increase the likelihood it will happen. You know, we see that with crashes. We see that with pretty much everything in our societies. You know, if we believe in a positive outcome, often we can increase the likelihood it comes out that way. And I think that's especially relevant when it comes to this issue, because we can actually engage with our technology, with our health, with our agricultural systems in a way that increases the likelihood that this future and super intelligent entity will kind of possess these qualities as well.
Yeah, absolutely. The book, one more time, is Dear Machine, A Letter to a Super Aware Intelligent Machine, available at Amazon.
Yep, it's on Amazon.
And if they want to, and I'm going to put this in the show notes, and if they, people want to find out more about you, they can go to supersystemic.ly/tiermachine. If they want to get the book, they can go to /tiermachine. But if they want to find out more about your think tank and your investment possibilities, they can go to supersystemic.ly. It's been interesting having you on the show. It's been a really fun conversation. And Greg, I look forward to having you back again.
Awesome, Bert. Thank you so much for having me on.
You bet. Good stuff there from author Greg Kaiser. Not only is he an author, but he's an investor. He's an investor. You can check out more about him and his team at supersystemic.ly. And as always, my friends, let's share this show with as many people as we can. Let's, AI is the future, whether we like it or not. I think it's something to think about. It's something that's going to impact your future. Let's help as many people understand what's happening. Let's help as many people understand about the possibility of a super aware, intelligent machine. Remember, you were created to succeed.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.